Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle. I guess this is our first, everyone's kind of Skyping.
Well, yeah.
Wayne isn't.
Technically, I'm Skyping, so I'm on Skype, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I guess you are.
when everyone's Skyping, that does mean that everyone's Skyping.
Well, I guess I should have trusted my first instincts there. I was right.
Oh, jeez.
So did everybody see the D&D Bachelor Party news?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, what a blast that sounds like.
So people who haven't seen it on Twitter, I think that's been retweeted like 1,000 times, or seen it on our forum, that somebody put on Craigslist asking for a woman who's familiar with D&D 3 or 3.5 and who has her own books.
Preferably.
Preferably. Yeah. And a D cup, at least a D cup?
It was C.
C cup, okay.
So reasonable,
I guess. And we don't want to go overboard.
Yeah.
Nope. And you notice the other thing? It said it was only for 30 minutes. It was only for half an hour. Like, what kind of adventure are you going to get in half an hour?
Yeah, so they would like this person to be the dungeon master and do it topless for a bachelor party. My take on this is the best man planned like a Firefly marathon and D&D thing? And the husband-to-be was kind of like, well, it is my bachelor party. Shouldn't we have, like, strippers or something? And this is the kind of the compromise, so he's only going to have her in for, like, 30 minutes, and then they can get back to the real gaming. All right. That's my take on it.
Yeah, but if you do that, wouldn't you just have the 30 minutes of bachelor party and not game during that 30 minutes and then, you know, game again afterwards? I don't know.
Well, maybe the guy really wants to play D&D.
I guess so. And he only has
fine, we'll have a topless dungeon master.
I don't know, maybe he only has 30 minutes for this bachelor party.
That's all his wife will let him
it's
do.
Kind of a sad bachelor party. I just said that's a sad bachelor party, but I think that was already sad. Maybe he's got a real bachelor party to go to. He's like, yeah, guys, all right, let's do the topless dungeon master. Yeah, I only got 30 minutes before I actually meet my other
bachelor. Actually, I was just thinking that. That could very well be true. Yeah. All right, I hung out with the nerds. Time to go to the real party.
I don't know. I guess if that's what you love.
D&D and boobs. That you're gonna get.
Match made in heaven.
Yeah, says the guy who's doing a podcast on gaming. I guess we like gaming. Well, we didn't do that at your bachelor party, Chris.
No, we didn't. Definitely not.
Are we allowed to say what we did at your bachelor party? Or?
No, we are not.
Sure, why not? Reportedly, there were lesbians, but no boobs. I don't know. I lost memory of somewhere midway through the
not
night.
Not reportedly, so. There were.
They weren't real lesbians. They were university lesbians.
Okay, fine. Oh, did they show you? Did they show you their card or something? Did you ask to see their identity?
No. It's just like, you know, girls in university. It's a way to like pick up guys, just to like make out with your friends. Come on, guys.
Or it's just a way to make out with your friends because that's what you like. Come on, Lyle.
No. You never been to like a club in university and the girls like dance together and then start making out, but it's totally just to pick up the guys.
I have seen the girls dancing together and then start making out, but I didn't realize that it was to pick up guys.
Oh, you missed an opportunity, my friend.
I tell you what, because I would have been right in there otherwise.
Asking both of them to play D&D.
Yeah, right. You girls sure seem to be into each other. You into role-playing?
Yeah, we are a little bit. Oh, right. What's with the dice? Oh. Yeah. Oh, are you into Amber? Sorry. I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. Bust out the book. Oh, that kind. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on to our actual topic, which has nothing to do with topless dungeon masters. Unless you
dang
want.
It.
We've lost all our listeners. Is the first episode in our second annual Month of Horror.
Woo!
And again, we've chosen October to be our Month of Horror.
Oh, that wasn't even funny. I don't know why I laughed.
Yeah, it's like, I can't even laugh at my own joke. I was like, yeah. That wasn't even funny in my mind.
Why did I even say that?
Maybe I'll just pretend I'm really dry. So, like last year, we've chosen four episodes, all with a horrific theme. And to start us off, we're going to do a creature feature. So I suppose that's pretty appropriate. And this one will be ghosts, because I believe, again, we've gotten the don't do zombies for the month of horror. I think that was our only feedback.
Yeah.
We put out the call, and we heard, and one person heard it, and it was, don't do zombies.
And this time we're actually going to listen to this advice.
Yeah. Well, we listened to it last year when we got it.
Yeah, we listened to the don't do zombies advice. We didn't listen to the don't do zombies or vampires.
Yeah.
And too bad we already played vampires. Yeah. So, unlike a normal creature feature, normally we talk about the creature in fiction and myth and, I guess, quasi-history. And then move on to antagonist, protagonist. We kind of learned our lesson from vampires, which is, and vampires are kind of a huge topic, and there's so many different kinds. So what we've done is, similar to our Warriors episodes, we've pulled out some common elements or common themes to kind of shape ghosts. So we have three things that we're going to focus on, and then we're going to talk about ghosts as antagonists and protagonists, and how to play them. All right, so to kick it off, appropriate enough, we're going to talk about creation.
So I think there's kind of two broad categories of creation when you're talking about ghosts, and that can be sort of natural creation and unnatural creation, and I realize at times a little strange, but in certain cultures, and including Christianity, as Lyle pointed out, becoming a ghost or like a spirit is kind of a natural part of life. You know, that's just kind of the next stage, if you will. After you die, it's kind of assumed that you'll become a ghost and, you know, either go to some kind of afterlife. So you can kind of consider that a natural creation of a ghost. And then the unnatural creation is sort of the violent accident or sort of the traumatic death that sort of prevents a spirit from moving on to the afterlife or wherever it would go and kind of keeps it in the mortal world as what we would consider a ghost.
So the difference is between a natural death and an unnatural death.
I guess so, yeah.
Okay.
Both of those can lead to ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
I think, if you talk about spirits, then, I mean, if you're passing on, like the spirit leaves the body and moves on and you never see it again or never see it at all, then it's not really a ghost as far as what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That's true, but in certain cultures, the ancestor spirits, you could actually contact them and, you know, they would sort of...
Well, then you would see them again. Or hear from them.
Well, yeah, so in certain times. In some cultures, yeah, you don't. In others, you kind of do see them again.
Yeah, regardless if it's like unnatural or natural, I think it's the key with the ghosts is like something's... They're tied to the material world in some way. Now, if you're talking about the unnatural death, it could be, yeah, like it could be revenge, like a revenant. Mm. You know, they want that revenge factor. Or if it is the ancestor worship, you know, it is that they're there to help the family or to communicate with the family or to watch over them.
Yeah, for example, and Wayne gets the credit for this because he found this factoid. In Egypt, they said that families would even write letters to their deceased ancestors so that their spirits could come back and help the family in times of need. They seem to be full-on believers of it.
With the Egyptian culture, the thing I read is that the Egyptians were almost incapable of sort of thinking of not existing. So when you were alive, you know, you had your body, then yeah, after you died, you know, your ka moved on to the afterlife. And I think we brought this up in the Egyptian episode, but you could die again after you were a ghost because the afterlife was kind of dangerous. But that was like the ultimate fear, you know, that you would kind of cease to exist in some form. But yeah, as Lyle said, there is something holding you, the ghost, to the material plane, whether that's your family or some kind of, you know, traumatic accident. And I think one of the interesting things is with the ancestor worship and with the family, certain cultures thought that if you, you know, didn't appease your ancestors or appease these family ghosts, they would kind of turn malevolent and bring ill luck or ill fortune to your family or start to mess with you, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, like, yeah, similar to the letters or just that concept is, you know, in Japan, they'll have the shrines in the house, and then certain times a year, they'll leave out the food and the drink for them to partake in.
Well, that kind of reminded me of the Mexican Day of the Dead.
Yep.
Or even Obon here in Japan, you know?
Yeah, have you guys been to Kyoto for Obon before?
I don't believe so, no.
It's really cool, because they have the big river down the center of the city, so they take all these little tiny paper boats, and they light a candle on each boat, and they float them down the river, and it's supposed to be the candles that guide the souls back of the dead back into the city for it, and it's actually really cool to just see thousands of these little tiny candle-lit paper boats floating down a river. Very surreal.
So they're inviting the spirits in, essentially?
Well, I think you light candles on the shrine in the house as a guiding light to help the soul guide home, and they kind of just take it one step further by floating them down a river to help guide the souls en masse back to the city.
Okay. Ancient Greeks had a festival, you know, to honor their familiar spirits. Mm-hmm. But then at the end, you know, it was like, okay, now it's time for you to leave. It's time for you to go back to the afterlife.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kind of, I was wondering if it was kind of guiding them in or, you know, kind of guiding them back out again so they actually do leave and don't hang around.
Well, it sounds like it was pretty necessary for the way the Greeks believed, because, man, their ghosts were mean. Mm. There's some evil ghosts in ancient Greece. If you didn't constantly appease your ancestors, they would come back and they would haunt you, make you sick, poison your food, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. All this talk about boats and that's like the least scary thing ever. Yeah, let's bring some more. There's also like the kind of, have you ever heard of the tulpa? It's a ghost that's created by thought form.
I haven't, no.
It's a Tibetan concept.
Like a meme ghost? M-E-M-E?
So like the ghost of lolcats?
Yeah, LOL cats, yeah.
Yeah, talk about not scary. Oh, that's the cutest lolcat ghost I've ever seen.
No, it's like you create or invent a ghost and then contact the ghost, you know, mm-hmm. communicate with them, but it's entirely dependent on the creator's desire or will. I guess what would be a way to, you know, Harvey, the movie Harvey with James Stewart?
Yeah.
And he has the imaginary rabbit?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it'd be like something like that. Except it actually is. Like, you've created it. I mean, the imaginary friend. Mm. So it's like you've willed something into existence, in essence.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. So I suppose you would call that an unnatural creation.
Mm-hmm.
Does it take, like, characteristics of the person who created it? Like, if I created this meme ghost, would it have kind of bits of my personality? Or is it more like it has whatever personality I want it to have?
I think it would be whatever you willed it into. I mean, you could create a doppelganger of yourself, or you could create somebody who is the exact opposite, you know, like something that's something that's perfect, like Fight Club.
Oh yeah.
In essence, you could say, oh, spoiler, that Brad Pitt is kind of like this tulpa of Edward Norton.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Whoa, that movie makes sense now.
Yeah, hold on. Yeah, it does make a lot of sense, yeah. Or what if, again, spoiling another movie, Sixth Sense, but yeah, I mean, that is more of an unnatural creation in the sense that the unfinished business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had to, because of what happened with the character played by Donnie Wahlberg,
mm-hmm.
He comes back to, you know, help out Haley Joel Osment's character.
Hmm.
But you could also you take that another way and say he's a tulpa of the little kid that he's created this kind of mentor to help him.
Hmm.
It's kind of like the helpful spirit's not very scary, but it certainly is a different way to think of ghosts.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the ancestor worship. We've seen this done, you know, like werewolf in the White Wolf werewolf games. For whatever reason, they decided to give the werewolves a very strong bond to the spirit world.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the things that they have are like abilities to like draw upon like ancestral powers. So their ancestors will help them. So there's really, an incredible amount you can do with that in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And you can even make it like the family member, you don't really like them, you know?
Mm.
But they're family. They could be, you could be descended from like a serial killer.
That would kind of suck.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, mm-hmm. Wouldn't be great.
That would be kind of interesting in game, because I think a lot of people, yeah, it's not scary, but a lot of people assume ghosts are going to be this restless dead that, you know, you either have to like appease or banish somehow. But yeah, in that case, no, it's an ancestor, it's a helpful spirit, it's a ghost that someone has created by their force of will. And mm-hmm. What are you going to do with that? Are you going to just kill it? Because you're essentially killing someone's family again. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, also, you know, you could look at it from the ghost perspective. I mean, you say like this honoring the ancestor once a year is something that we have to do. Maybe the ghost has to do it too. He has to come back to the human world once every year. Maybe he's not happy with it either. Sounds more like the plot for a sitcom than for a game, but still.
Yeah, I can see that hanging out in like the afterlife. It's like, oh man, I gotta go visit my idiot grandson again next week.
Yeah.
Stand that guy.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun. And if you played with the anniversary thing, and this is more of a campaign kind of idea, is that plan it around October or whatever, just pick some time, and that's the time, yeah, that the spirits do come and they're suddenly part of the game,
mm-hmm.
regardless of what game you're playing. And it could be any game, you know, you keep changing your character, but it's like you're all part of the same line.
Yeah. Mm.
It's like, ah, oh, you know, yeah, I got to help you out now.
Or like say, playing off that, I think if you are running like a long-running campaign, if you've had PCs that have died during that campaign,
yeah.
How awesome would it be for like the game master to have them like come back on that All Souls Day like once every year and, you know,
I was going to make that same suggestion. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I think it would be pretty funny. Yeah. Not spooky, but funny.
Yeah.
All right, so let's shift to some spooky. So I guess, yeah, the Restless Dead, we talked about, you know, kind of the Restless and Cranky Dead. But you could also do the Restless where, yeah, there's something horrific really happened to the person. And you could do, like, the mystery where, you have to investigate why are they here. And I think, you know, yeah, really playing with that, you know, something's tying this ghost here. So regardless, like, because it changes it from like a straight up combat, or changes it to just ignore it. But there's a mystery. There's something involved where they have to find how this ghost was created. And I think those are the best ghost stories.
No, I agree. I was thinking like in some games, you know, the ghosts are just kind of another type of undead foe to, you know, to deal with in a combat situation. And whoa, don't get hit by them because, you know, you'll lose a level or something. But like really, if you're fighting a ghost, would you actually be able to do anything to them?
I'm
kind of thinking not. But if they have like this anchor or this fetter or this thing that's tying them to the material world, that could be attacked if you have people who like combat, you know, and just go, oh, just go hack up that key that it's attached to or something.
Because that's an exciting combat there.
Well, exactly, yeah. Of course, it would have to be like, oh, and the key transformed into a metal golem, huh?
Yeah, but, there you go.
But, yeah, it does change it to, like, a mystery. Like, okay, now we have to find out what this thing is and then deal with it. And, yeah, the more interesting and sort of creepy ghost stories are, I think it's some kind of human element that's keeping them attached to this world, you know, like, hey, now you have to track down this serial killer or this abusive family member or this, you know, other kind of really despicable and creepy person that has, you know, killed this person to create this ghost. And in that case, then maybe the ghost itself isn't really all that scary, but, you know, the person or creature who kind of inadvertently created the ghost could be pretty horrific, which may be kind of cheating because, like I said, the ghost isn't scary, but.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, that's really what separates the ghosts from all the undead is how they're created. Cause you have zombies and it's like, oh, where'd the zombie come from? Oh, another zombie bit it. You have a vampire, where'd the vampire come from? Another vampire bit it.
You have a werewolf, where'd that werewolf come from?
Biting.
Oh, another werewolf
yeah.
bit it. Yeah, I'm sensing the theme here.
Yeah, so it's like with, well, I guess werewolves aren't undead, but anyway, a monster. But with a ghost, it's all about how are they created? And there's other things that we're going to get to a little bit later, but that's really at the core of a ghost and the core of a ghost story.
Hmm.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Oh, it's like the furniture's moving. Like, who cares? But it's like, why is the furniture moving? What's moving it? And, okay, we've established it's a poltergeist.
Mm-hmm.
So what's caused this poltergeist, you know?
Well, yeah, that's what ghosts are all about. Ghosts are not about the future or even the present. They're about the past. They're about what happened, and they're often very selfish for them. The ghost's past is the most important part of it. So you need to figure out what happened. How did they come about?
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, like, there's a poltergeist in the room, and it's moving furniture around. In a high fantasy game, yeah, big deal. So what? It's just a mage casting levitate chair, you know? How do you differentiate that from a ghost?
I'm sorry, what's levitating the chair?
The mage. He's cast the levitate chair spell. Oh, it's not actually a ghost. And we can cut that section out.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I'm not sure where to go with that, dude.
I was like, I'm sorry, what?
The dreaded levitate chair spell, no.
Oh, no, you know, you said the furniture is moving, and the first thing that popped into my head is like this wizard hiding behind a curtain casting levitate object, you know?
Giggling to himself.
Yeah, exactly. Psych is not a ghost. It's actually just a
genius. You missed the part where I said this is the month of horror.
I guess so. I guess so.
What is it? The month of slapstick. Yeah. You know, but that does raise a really interesting point. This is a bit broader than the ghost, but it is the element of magic and horror and how to combine that. Because when you have like high fantasy, especially, it's very, very difficult to bring horrific elements into the game. And the levitate spell, it's so simple, right? And it's so mundane in a high fantasy game, but when we look talking about our world, like, yeah, why is that chair levitating? And our mind's going to go to, you know, I guess a rational person would try to rationalize that, however, like looking for strings or whatever. But, you know, most of us would be like, oh, is this a ghost? Is this whose chair possessed? Is this house possessed? You know?
Yeah. Mm.
And I think with a ghost, they probably work best in a very low magic or kind of a mundane setting.
Right.
Where simple things like furniture moving on its own can or should create a sense of unease.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, really, a lot of that is what, you know, the ghost does. Like, you put your hand through the ghost or something, and it's like, whoa, that's scary. Instead of like, oh, I think my magic sword can hit intangible things. It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Quick, get a +2 sword. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yes, a wizard behind the curtain would be kind of silly.
Kind of lame.
It'd be like this, like, lame fantasy Scooby-Doo. Be like, oh, I wasn't a ghost after all. It was a 20th level wizard. Oh. See, there's an easy explanation for everything.
And also one other thing you can look at is what you suggested before, Lyle, with Sixth Sense, is there's also the possibility that the ghost doesn't even realize that they are a ghost and what you can do with that.
I think it would be pretty interesting. Like, in certain times and certain cultures, ghosts weren't always intangible. They just kind of looked like regular, ordinary people. And again, I know this is a month of horror, and that's not really horrific, and you encounter a regular person, but a ghost who doesn't know it's a ghost, that could add some mystery there if they just looked like a regular person.
That's really the key to putting horror into a game, is mystery. The unknown is one of the most frightening things there is.
You know, you know what wasn't mysterious about your comment there? Was the fact that you opened with the answer.
Shut up.
Sorry. I think that mystery to what? Yeah. All right, and so the next thing you do, I mean, so you have the ghost. The ghost is there. It's established. It's created. So the big question is, how does the ghost interact with you? So our second kind of theme is interaction.
Throughout history, there's so many different kinds of ghosts and so many different ways that they exist and interact with the world that it's really hard to really classify anything. But you can take a look at whether the ghost actually does interact with people or not. Some ghost stories, they just tell about ghosts that kind of relive their death scene over and over and over again for eternity. But whereas you have others that can actually talk and move about and speak to people. You have whether they're tied to a single location or whether they're free roaming, whether, as Wayne said, you can touch them or if your hand passes right through them, things like that.
Whether they can move objects around.
Yeah, they have telekinesis, whether they can possess you, the various kinds of spooky effects like making a room cold or filling an elevator full of blood or something.
Yeah, filling an elevator full of blood, that is pretty spooky.
Yeah, I guess it would be, eh? Would it be filled to the top and you go, bing, psh, pours out?
Yeah, they did that on Event Horizon, didn't they?
The Pardon Shining, that's what I was referring to.
Oh, I thought they did that on Event Horizon, too. Oh, maybe it was an elevator, but it was some kind of thing. Room just filled up with blood, and then... Yeah.
Yeah. I think just blood, maybe. Maybe it's not the elevator.
Oh my god, it's an elevator!
Yeah. I was thinking, okay. Blood, not spooky. Blood in an elevator? Oh my god.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm sure, you know, we give a list of it, but everyone's pretty familiar with different kinds of ghost stories and such. But it's important to really choose kind of the limits and the abilities of the ghosts before you get into the game, because of course that'll have a big effect on how people interact and play with it.
I think, you know, it's not the greatest movie in the world, but Ghost, the movie Ghost, actually does a very good job of showing interaction, because obviously he wants to interact with his wife, if you know what I mean.
And I was waiting for those air quotes.
What up, stick
quote? Interact.
I want to make a pot with her.
No. And that means through Whoopi Goldberg, then well, so be it.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, they're showing them how to move objects and, you know, because they are intangible, so how do they move things and trying to do that. I thought that was, like, yeah, really good, and maybe it's kind of jumping a bit to Ghost as a antagonist, but still, just thinking about if you have an intangible ghost, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Is it both? Is it tangible and something happens and, you know, kind of like the robes fall to the floor and there's nothing, you know, nothing but an empty kimono.
Spooky. No, but actually, that said, I have a ghost written down in my notes too as a great example of how to look at ghosts interacting with the real world.
Yeah, and it could be certain triggers. I mean, something that brings them not only into the world, but can make them tangible. I'm thinking Ring and the videotape, and that kind of like brings the situation about. But what if the ghost is always there, but you know, playing that movie or doing whatever or that particular song allows them to do something for a particular period of time.
Yeah.
But, you know, for that 3-minute song, while it's playing, and I mean, you can play that up, and it's like, now the ghost can do certain things. It's not trapped in the other world, so to speak, or completely intangible and impotent. Mm. It actually has powers.
Yeah. I think that would be pretty cool. And that would be a nice twist on the, like you brought it up, like the ring. I'll call it, for lack of a better term, I'll call it like the omen object. You know, there's always that urban legend of, you know, you watch this video or you play this tape or, you know, you do this thing and then you're going to die within 3 days. But it could just be, no, that's how the ghost interacts. I mean, cut out the dying part because that would be kind of, you wouldn't be able to solve the mystery. But no, it's just the ghost is kind of part of this thing. Well, for that amount of time, yeah, it can interact. But there was a story called The Boggart that I read a while back. It's a young adult book, and it's about, you know, a spirit that lives in an old castle that gets updated, and kids move in, and they have the internet and electricity and everything. And to get their attention, it actually goes, it figures out it can go into the computer and show them images, you know, of kind of what it wants to happen, and that's kind of how it interacts with them.
Oh, okay. What is it? The frequency, I think it's called, where the ghost of the father communicates with the son on the radio or the ham radio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a Korean ghost movie about the cell phone. I think it's called The Phone.
Ooh, that sounds pretty good. You know, just like the phone rings, and whether it's malevolent or benevolent, either way, I mean, there's a lot you can do with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What if it was like a antiquated technology, like an 8-track?
Well, then it'd be where I was thinking, like, a jazz drive.
Yeah. An old iOmega zip drive, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, look, that punch card thing is punching itself. Quick, put it in. What's he say?
I like that antiquated technology thing because that could be a whole, you know, mystery of figuring out what you need to then communicate with this ghost because not everybody has, like, a punch card reader just lying around.
Yeah, right. You guys sell any vacuum tubes?
I mean, you can also do the seance kind of stuff where they pick out a pen and, you know, they would have to, you know, the ghost writing.
Mm-hmm.
An animal. There's possession, you know, they possess cars. Christine is a great example of a possessed car from Stephen King. I really liked in Christine, you know, you can compare the book and the movie, but I mean, John Carpenter was the director of that movie, so, I mean, you can't go wrong there. Oh, wait a minute, you can. Escape from L.A. But, you know, the one way that Christine communicated was through the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, it's not a spoiler, but they would have like lines from different, you know, classic songs opening up the chapters.
Mm-hmm.
And with the movie, that you can actually have it just like in real time. You know, the radio is like, you know, like they're trying to get into the car and suddenly you keep on knocking, but you can't come in, comes through the mm-hmm. radio.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about the challenges of incorporating music into a role-playing game, but I mean, this is actually a case if you cue it up properly. And that's the way the ghost is communicating, whether it's through a car radio or just through random sources like the TV or the radio or the stereo or somebody's MP3 player.
Mm.
And then you can mm-hmm. give clues to the players.
I think that'd be pretty cool. It sounds like it'd be complicated, like you would have to come up with all these, you know, songs for different situations. But you could just use songs for different moods, angry, benevolent, scared, a couple other ones, and just play it when the ghost would be feeling that emotion, and I think that would work too.
You don't even need lyrics, really. I mean, it's just, how does this music make the person feel? And it can be, again, malevolent or benevolent, whichever way you want to go with that ghost NPC, if you will, yeah.
Well, you'd have to be a little bit careful, though, with that, because you're not exactly sure what emotions a different song might invoke in different people.
Well, I mean,
if I put on Viking metal or something, Wayne might think the ghost is happy, but I'd think it was annoyed.
And Lyle would just think, hey, its ears are bleeding.
Oh, turn that off. I keep trying to speak to you. Kept trying to warn you. Oh, it's Viking metal? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's also a good idea to decide the level of interaction that the ghost has. Like you mentioned before, if they have a certain time limit on how long they're able to speak with the players, or if they are tangible versus intangible, just how much is that? You know, can they throw a book across the room? Can they throw an entire chair or something like that? Or if there's a time limit against it or something. Just get something to keep in mind.
Well, you can even do even more with just the, like, not just the song time limit or whatever, but just time limits in general.
Yeah, for example, you could do, if you're doing a seance for it, the ghost would only be able to communicate during the period of that seance, or it could have something to do with the way they died for it. If it was during a full moon, then they can only come back on the full moon night stuff to fight werewolves or something.
You mentioned that made me think of something. Like, what if you reversed the ideas where the living people have to reenact some kind of situation to be able to contact the ghost? Like, normally certain ghosts replay their deaths again and again, right? They play out this situation. But what if you flipped that and the people had to reenact, you know, its death in order to get in contact with the ghost? And I don't mean you have to, like, maybe for, like, a really horrific twist, someone would actually have to die, you know, to be able to contact this ghost.
So we've just turned this into, like, human sacrifice.
Yeah,
ritual.
Right.
No, that wasn't initially what I was thinking, but
it is spookier. You
know. No, like I can totally see that thing. Like, if somebody died in a car crash because they were going too fast down this road, maybe if you drive quickly down the same road, then the ghost will appear next to you for it. That's the only way that you're able to summon them up and get your information.
Which ties in neatly to time limit, because then you're playing a game of chicken, you know?
Exactly. And if you don't slow down before that turn, you suffer the same fate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I kind of like that. That's pretty cool.
And better than sacrificing random people.
Well, yeah, all right.
As far as interaction goes, you can also get into more of the supernatural kinds of things. You have historical kind of ghosts like banshees, or things where they have a ghostly wail that can paralyze people, or you have ghostly kinds of touch that can give you a heart attack, or, I don't know, drain levels or something like that. Mm. I don't really think that fits that well into a horror kind of thing, because it makes it a little bit more adventure. Style, but it does make the ghosts more dangerous, which can increase the fear factor in them.
Well, I was thinking, like, you saying the banshee reminded me, and yeah, you know, the banshees wail when people who hear it, you know, they only have so much longer to live, or again, in certain cultures, people thought that seeing a ghost was a sign of doom, that, you know, you were going to die pretty soon. So yeah. If you establish that in your world, then that could be kind of a, I guess, more of a psychological horror thing. You know, you hear this sound, or you, more importantly, like, you see a ghost, and you know that means you only have, like, 3 days left to live.
Yeah. It kind of gets more into, like, using the ghost as a psychological element than as a creature in the game itself. But still, it can definitely have a good effect.
Hmm. If there's a way where you can reverse it, you know, by finding its anchor or appeasing it or doing something to, you know, have it move on to wherever it should be, and you kind of end that 3-day time limit and you're not going to die, then, I don't know, I think it could be a pretty good...
Yeah, good point. Very good story.
You know, you have a nice tight time limit where you have to do this thing or game over.
Mm-hmm.
Does give a sense of urgency. To a game that maybe some people might not normally associate with a ghost story.
Well, I think it also kind of gives people, or gives the characters a reason to get involved, you know?
Because if they don't, they'll die.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a bit heavy-handed, you know, but in certain games or certain settings, it'd be like, oh, a ghost, we know it can't really do much, so we'll just go this way and ignore it, you know? It's like, nope, you saw the ghost found you, so your choice. You either got to try and solve its problem, or you're dead.
And actually, you know, it is good. We suggested, like, the Egyptian and the Greek ghosts. Take a look at some of the other cultures around the world. Like, Western ghosts, at least as far as ones in America, aren't really that dangerous. Like, they can't touch you. They don't really kill people. They might scare them to death or cause them to, like, drive off a cliff or something. But, you know, ghosts in other parts of the world, here in Japan specifically, ghosts are freaking evil. I mean, they'll show up with a knife and they'll slit your throat for you.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't want to point out, Chris, you said that ghosts aren't that dangerous, and then your very next point was they can just scare you to death, so.
It's true. Like, ghosts, Western ghosts are dangerous, but they're not directly dangerous. They don't attack. Whereas ghosts in other parts of the world, they do.
Hmm. Yeah, I saw that video series when ghosts attack.
So when they went to America, not that interesting.
Yeah. It's like cops.
Where ghosts stand around.
Just getting ghosts without shirts on. And it's like, you have a license? No. No.
Ghosts gone wild.
Isn't that ghost gone wild?
You're haunting this house without a license? Oh, no. Can you empty your pocket? Is this yours? No. Just holding it for another ghost.
Yeah.
There's the Headless Horseman. I mean, he's pretty scary. Or doppelgangers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty scary. That's German.
Yeah, but they're malevolent spirits. They're kind of getting into more of the demon realm than ghosts.
Oh, okay.
I know it's a very, very thin hair. I understand, but
there, yeah.
I mean, sure. Everybody calls them ghosts.
You see the hair I'm holding up right now? You see that hair? No, why? It's a ghost hair.
Because when a Western ghost starts killing people, we call him a demon. What?
No, but just the Headless Horseman, I mean, that's tied to a location. You know, once you crossed that bridge, you were safe, and he couldn't mm-hmm. get you anymore. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not the same thing as time, but that is another way to limit the interaction.
Well, yeah, definitely. Absolutely, location. Yeah. I mean, the haunted house. I mean, I mean, just go out of the house.
Yeah, exactly. Absolute classic. Mm. Which if is, you can.
Which is what I always yell whenever I watch those stupid monster movies. Like, oh, geez, why didn't you just leave?
Yeah, it's like the haunted one-bedroom apartment. Oh, I'm just going to walk out the door now. Yeah, okay.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, so, I mean, interaction is really key, and there's a lot of interesting things you can do with that.
Mm-hmm.
So once you interact, I guess the next thing is a kind of a resolution. And what we hinted at in creation is you kind of find out what the creation is. And, of course, with the interaction, where are you interacting? Sometimes you can just escape by crossing the bridge. So the final theme for the ghost is like a resolution. Like, how do you resolve this ghost story?
Well, we've already covered kind of the idea that they're here for something, for a matter of revenge or to get some kind of unresolved thing out of their lives. There's also the idea of they're keyed to an object or a place. So you have to burn that place down or destroy that object.
Yeah, yeah.
Violent response, yeah.
Right. Yeah, if you want to go the violent route.
There's different things you can do, and it doesn't necessarily mean, like, you know, destroying something or doing something violent. It could be you're atoning.
Hmm.
It's haunting mm-hmm. you for a specific reason because of something that you did, and, of course, maybe it doesn't want to kill you because it wants you to suffer, but there's a way around it. You can go on some sort of mission or do some sort of, you can appease the ghost or atone for what you did. Mm-hmm. And that opens up a lot of possibilities. I mean,
well, I remember in a game of D&D I played years ago, there was this one kind of mini big bad that it took us a while to get at him, but eventually we were able to kill him, and man, we really did kill him. When he was dead on the ground, we were still slicing him for a while just because it was kind of catharsis after trying to kill him for so long. But we did so much of it that the DM decided to bring him back as a ghost, and he started haunting us for a while. It was pretty interesting because then we had to figure out how to atone for having been wronged him. So
yeah, it's kind of disturbing there, Chris.
Yeah. Turns out we just needed that +2 sword, and then we killed him again and kept wailing on him. And then he came back with ghost was too.
Yeah, you stay down. You stay down.
Oh, come on. You tell me you've never done that, beating the crap out of the big bad.
Well, once you get it down and it's dead, dude.
Yeah.
do I need it? No. Okay, no. I won't get into that.
You hit zero hit points. You don't need to keep going.
Do you remember the body parts you were cutting off of the Nazis in the zombie game?
I'm sorry, the body?
No, you were.
Body parts and zombies?
Yeah, but the zombie, the World War II zombie game I ran?
Yeah, I remember that.
You remember how you killed the zombies, cut off their fingers, and were painting with their blood on the walls?
I think there was a reason for that, though.
Because you're screwed up in the head?
No. There was a reason for doing that. Unless somebody else is doing it. If I did it, there would have been a reason.
If someone else was doing that, it would just plain nuts up.
Yeah, it's like, whoa, dude.
Anyway.
No, like, I think some ghosts, as you said, Lyle, they kind of haunt a person. In the Middle Ages, one of the things ghosts did was they kind of came back essentially to warn people, because back then kind of ghosts were sent to purgatory, you know, kind of as punishment. So they might come back to either, like, ask for prayers, you know, for them so that they could, you know, move on to the afterlife. Or they would come back to warn people, you know, hey, you know, you better live a good life or else you're going to end up in purgatory like me.
Yeah.
Suppose it is pretty benevolent, you know, or selfish, should they say, hey, pray for me so I can move on.
Well, you know, the one of the ideas for a ghost story that you can tell is a guardian angel kind of story. But, you know, if someone's not familiar with the concept of ghosts or guardian angels, you know, things that are moving by themselves, it can scare the crap out of you. It might take the character quite a while to realize that it's a benevolent spirit.
Wouldn't that be a guardian ghost?
Okay, yes, guardian ghost.
Sorry.
So, yeah, I suppose I'm the one responsible for splitting that hair, so I deserve that.
Guardian angel?
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, call it a guardian angel. Well, not really a ghost.
But actually, getting into that, I mean, there's also the idea of confronting the ghost directly. You know, you might want to be able to just find a way to communicate with it so that you can convince it to leave this house or to leave this person alone. Or it might be some kind of ritual that you're able to gather the components for and cast to dispel them. Or it might come down to a form of combat. Though I don't think, yeah, you can make it much more interesting than just the +2 sword, of course.
Hmm. Now, kind of what you said about, like, confronting a ghost, like, again, at certain times it was believed that you could just ask them their purpose in the name of Jesus, and that benevolent ghosts would have to reveal what they were doing, mm-hmm. but by sort of invoking Jesus' name, sort of malevolent ghosts would be banished. And so, you know, it's kind of, it kind of reminded me of the vampire restriction. Yeah, it is pretty easy, you know. It kind of reminded me of the vampire restriction of, you know, not being able to go into a house unless you're invited. And mm-hmm. it doesn't say, or I didn't read, but if that's kind of part of the ghosts of your world, then would that be an interesting restriction to work around? Probably not. It's a lot more final, you know.
Everybody you meet, hello, Jesus. And occasionally they just go, ah!
Yeah.
So what are some different ways to get rid of ghosts?
I think one of the classic ones is to find the ghost's body and give it a proper burial.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is it's not at rest.
Okay, yeah, no, it's the proper burial. Sometimes we were just talking about the time thing. You just have to endure that night. I mean, you can't really resolve it. The resolution is to endure it and to live out that particular period of time.
And at the end of that night, aren't you usually like able to inherit the mansion or the $1 million or something?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I guess we could do that. Yeah, I guess we can make it a comedy. All right. Yeah, or a reality TV show.
Yeah, you can always do the where you hold a seance where you can so that you're able to communicate with the ghost and find out why it's here and then deal with that, or even just ask it to leave.
The super boring way.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Like you said about the seance and appeasing it, Chris, it could sort of be possession, you know, where the ghost itself sort of needs to complete something. And so if it's intangible and can't interact with anything, it needs to possess someone to finish whatever it needed to finish.
Yeah. And then you can sacrifice that person and it's all done.
Oh, I didn't mean sacrifice that person. I meant, you know, like a willing possession, you know.
Yeah.
That's something we failed to elaborate on in interaction is possession. And you have ghosts that are, you know, essentially riders. We talk about that a little bit in our voodoo episode.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how they ride a horse. Yeah, that's right, Lyle. They ride a horse. Yeah.
I was going to say, dude, you might want to clarify it. Why do these ghosts ride horses?
It's called a conversation, guys.
All right.
Lyle, why do these ghosts ride horses?
No, you know. I mean, riding a horse, or like, which is just their way of saying possessing a person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they bring their mannerisms into them.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
speak with their voice.
They can possess objects. They can possess animals. They can possess other people. They can jump. One of the it's not ghosts at all. It's from the Wild Card series by George R. R. Martin. But there's these guys, they're like jumpers, and they can put their consciousness and take over bodies.
Hmm.
And it just,
cool.
Just what was done with that is like, it was easily the most disturbing of all the Wild Card books. Hmm. And it was just a pretty disturbing stories all around anyway. And just imagine like if you had a ghost like that. There's that Denzel Washington movie, Fallen.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, it takes the, like a detective tracking down a serial killer, it adds the element of the, like the ghost and skipping from body to body.
Hmm.
Yeah. You know, actually, I was just talking about this before the episode with Wayne, but there's a game by White Wolf called Wraith, the Oblivion, I think it is. But part of that is that each Wraith has in their mind like a little shard of shadow Oblivion or whatever. But basically, it's a malicious force that if they fail a humanity check or something similar, that the Oblivion can take over the character. And the way that they run that mechanic is by one of the other players at the table taking control of the character for a while. And that would be a fun way to play with that kind of possession, is just give someone control.
Yeah, unless you have a real dick player at your table.
Yeah, it's also a good way to break up groups.
Yeah.
So now we'll move on to like playing them as antagonists and protagonists. So we'll start with antagonists, which I guess would be the more traditional way people would view ghosts.
Mm-hmm. So you have your traditional kinds of ghost stories where you have the haunted house story or haunted person for it. You have the hungry ghost story where the ghost is coming after someone. You have the story of ghost hunters where the players are actually going after the ghosts. And probably the most interesting one, though this is a bad example, that Jennifer Love Hewitt TV series, The Ghost Whisperer, it's kind of that idea of trying to solve mysteries to help ghosts go to rest, as some examples.
Yeah, no, I was wondering, you have the movie Ghostbusters, but I don't know, if the players kind of start out knowing that there are ghosts, and they're like a special ghost hunter team.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it sounds boring, but I don't know. I think it kind of spoils some of the mystery a little bit, you know?
Not necessarily.
Well, I was thinking, like, you guys are a ghost hunter team,
mm-hmm.
which means there's going to be ghosts there, you know? So.
Well, I don't know. I kind of look at it similar to the way we were talking about the vampire hunters back in the vampire episode, where, sure, if you have the same kind of vampire every single time, the, you know, the regular Dracula style, then it can get boring. But if you take the different cultures' kinds of vampires, and in this case, the different kinds of ghosts, where each one may have a very, very different way of being hunted, then you can definitely keep a story fresh for as long as you can think of ideas.
Yeah, of all the, like, you know, when you watch Supernatural, the ones where there's the greatest variety in how to stop them, it is the ghosts. And it, mm-hmm. We trace that back to the creation, where they do have that huge advantage over the other monsters. Is it's a mystery how they were created or why they're here. But what's not mysterious is that if you find out why they were created, you have a good chance of stopping them or getting rid of them. So, yeah, I mean, that's something definitely to play with. You can take a monster of the week that could just be simply just ghost after ghost. I don't know how much your players would want to just deal with ghost after ghost. But.
Well, now that you mention it, like, I guess, the ghosts do have a leg up on other monsters for, like, a monster of the week thing because of that possession. You know, the ability that where, okay, you're hunting a ghost, but, you know, now it's in a person. What do you do?
We have that for all of their different kinds of supernatural abilities. I mean, if you've got the intangible ghost, what exactly do you do? You can't touch this thing. How the heck are you going to take care of it? You've got the possession ghost where you might have to deal with a person, or maybe you've got, like, a full ghost that you can touch, but it's something like the Headless Horseman. You know, what do you do about that?
Right.
So, yeah, I think that ghosts, just as you said, Lau, they offer one of the widest varieties of possible villains that you can put in a game.
And I think just as antagonists, I mean... Yeah, play with, you know, the interaction. I think that's the key thing. Mm-hmm. And then certain things such as time limits or possession, how they're communicating with the people. I mean, that's where they can get really interesting, really exciting.
I'm wondering if it would be kind of frustrating for players a little bit because, you know, ghosts, yeah, they can be intangible. There could be very few clues for them to go on. You know, to track this ghost down. I mean, of course, the GM is going to, you know, provide them clues so they can kind of connect the dots and complete the story. But, like, if the ghost is sort of intangible and, you know, can sort of possess people or body hop, and I'm just kind of wondering what clues you could give.
Well, it's maybe you can deal with the ghost's actions. What is it doing? What does it look like? I mean, it may be intangible, but it may always appear as completely soaking wet with seaweed hanging off of it. So you'd know that you should look near a body of water for the first clue. Something along those lines.
Now that you mention that, I think that is, a good clue, because if you go with the idea, that ghosts kind of resemble the way that they died.
Mm-hmm.
Or show some physical characteristics of their mode of death. Well, yeah, then that is a good clue. Unless you're hunting someone who passed on peacefully, one of those ancestor spirits, and you're like, oh, great, let's start searching, you know, nursing homes.
Yeah. You know, it's probably not I guess it's scary enough, Candyman, and, or even Nightmare on Elm Street. I'm not a huge fan, but what I like about those movies, or an element that I do like about those movies, is that there's a legend, and this is where the players actually trigger the ghost coming in. I mean, and this plays on the tulpa concept a little bit, where they're actually almost creating. They're giving the legend life. Yeah, so if people not familiar with Candyman. Candyland, it's a game. You go up, you go down. I don't even think I've ever played Candyland. But if people not familiar with Candyman, there's a legend based around this guy named Candyman, and it's similar to the Bloody Mary urban legend. You know, if you look in the mirror and say Bloody Mary three times at a certain time. But then you create this ghost. I mean, and in a sense, that's can be a little bit more tragic in that you've kind of created this whole problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all your problems now, you know, are because of you. And you can even, like, plant these seeds if you have that kind of game. It's like there are these different legends, and see if the players try to create it or trigger it, you know?
That can be pretty cool.
Yeah, I think with players, you might have to offer some kind of benefit. You know, it's one thing to be at a slumber party and to double dare your friend to go in the bathroom and say Candyman a few times, but it might be hard to get a PC to do that. But if you offer, you know, the carrot along with it.
Except if we do the double dare. I double dare you. I triple dare you. Oh, no, a triple dare.
No, I was thinking, like, player characters and the players themselves are usually curious, you know? So if you sprinkled kind of clues like that, clues to this legend, you know, throughout a previous campaign or adventure, I imagine if they eventually, like, you know, pieced all the things together, you would get someone, and if you were not playing a Call of Cthulhu-style game where everybody knows everybody's going to go crazy at the end, if you were playing kind of a regular game and they eventually pieced all these, you know, parts together, I imagine they would try it, you know? I mean, what D&D group hasn't finally gotten, you know, all the fragments of a ritual and then said, okay, and now let's see what happens when we do it.
So, yeah, absolutely.
I think they would do it if you, you know, they
put but
it,
I mean,
together.
If you wanted to put a massive stake, I mean, you could have that hoard of treasure and there's that skeleton of a dragon and, you know, you say, you know, the dragon protected the hoard until, you know, till all time, and you're like, well, he's dead now, and then you take some of the hoard away, and you're like, what? starts coming back to life. You know, or even the ghost of a dragon. Imagine that, a ghost, massive ghost.
Yeah, that would be pretty scary.
Until it breathes fire on you, ghost fire, and then you're like, oh, nothing happened.
I just thought of, like, an elephant ghost, and that, yeah, that's kind of disturbing. Imagine that you're, like, standing in your room, and all of a sudden this, like, trunk just comes, materializes through the wall and grabs you.
That would be pretty freaky. I mean, granted, anything materializing through the wall and grabbing you would be freaky, but yeah. An elephant would be just
like a lion, like, coming through the wall and just...
Right? You know, ghost mall. Oh, jeez.
The ghost and the darkness.
When animals attack as ghosts.
No, I was going to say, you put ghost after anything... It's pretty scary. Come on.
Yeah.
Ghost shark. How scary would that be?
Ghost Wayne.
Ghost of a,
all right,
ghost of a
all right,
Care Bear.
You broke it right there.
Ghost of a Care Bear.
Yeah, but how did it die? Maybe very traumatically, and now it wants revenge.
You didn't care enough. The first Malkavian clan book for Vampire has this, like, really disturbing, like, they have a... As, like, famous Malkavians, and I think that one of them is, like, there's, like this child's drawing with Teddy with a knife, and it was, like, in blood is written on the walls. Teddy did it.
Yeah, that's kind of spooky.
Yeah, that was pretty spooky.
That's pretty freaky. I think that's scarier than the ghost elephant, actually.
I can't believe we didn't even bring this up until now. The ghost doll. Come on. The possessed dolls.
Yeah. Going back a little bit, you were mentioning before about like looking up legends and stuff. As far as a source of inspiration, that's a great way to go. On the internet or in a bookstore, there's thousands of books of urban legends and ghost stories around. There's just almost endless source material for you to look up different kinds of ghosts to use. And ghost elephants.
I mean, elephants do have graveyards. Oh, there you go.
So, yeah, I'm thinking of a haunted zoo right now. Sorry. Imagine that, haunted zoo.
How about, you know what's even scarier? Ghost circus train. How about that?
That'd be pretty spooky.
That'd be pretty spooky.
Well, how about, I think, yeah, really a lot of the ghost as antagonist ties back to things that we've talked about already. But as protagonists, I mean, because... interaction, you control that as a game master and drop it in when it's good for the story, when it's good for the players. But what if your players are ghosts, or what if one player is a ghost? I mean, there's some games out there where everybody plays a ghost, Wraith the Oblivion. I think, Wayne, you were talking about the third edition thing written by Monty Cook and Sean Reynolds.
Oh, yeah, that campaign's in a ghost walk. Yeah, everybody is ghost, essentially. Well, duh.
There's also Geist, the Sin Eater, which is another White Wolf product. That's more of a traditional ghost than the Wraith one.
Yeah, I was wondering, like, because interaction is so key, or lack of interaction is so key with ghosts, I was wondering, I think it would be cool, and this is going to get a little mechanical, to do some kind of reward mechanic that then allows ghost players to interact with the real world. You know? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, like, you know, you meet a couple goals, and essentially you would get, like, I guess, for lack of a better term, interaction points that you can then spend to affect the world around you. You know, I think doing something like that would be a cool way to play up the fact that, yeah, your time is either limited, or the way you can interact is going to be limited, And that's really going to affect how you are going to play as a ghost.
Yeah, I would definitely put it as a kind of like powers system like that, where you could have like the, I don't know, the communication power, depending on how many points you spend on it or how well you roll on it, then it allows you to give longer or more complex messages. You could have like physical interaction, you know, where a small one only allows you to move a coin, where a large one allows you to levitate that sofa. Again, though, I think what we talked about before, the movie Ghost, is a really great way to view ghosts as protagonists. They show the different, a lot of the classical things, possession, telekinesis, etc. But they also show kind of the limitations and ways around it and within it.
Yeah, but what about this? What if you, like, sort of broke down all of those ways they can interact with the material world and, like, parceled that out to a group of ghosts? You always talk about trying to get player characters to work as a team and have them kind of buy in. Hey, here you have a group, you know, your PC group is all ghosts, and each of them can kind of only do one thing.
That's a freaking awesome idea.
Only interact one way with the mortal world. Like, one guy is telekinesis, one guy is auto writing, one guy is something else.
The whole party, cool.
Yeah.
Split it out.
You know? Is
pretty interesting.
That's a sweet idea, Wynn.
Because then I don't know, like, if you go with the idea that they're trying to, you know, resolve whatever issue is still tying them here, well then, yeah, they're all going to have to work together, or working together to solve each of their issues would be easier, because as a group, now they have access to all these tools as opposed to only one if they're by themselves.
That's totally cool. You know, I was thinking earlier with this that with a ghosts, you could almost make, like, a non-social political game in that, you know...
I stand here and don't talk to you, but I'm still being political.
Well, actually, that's the whole point of it, because a political game, it's trying to get other people to do what you want them to, but it's all done through social interaction. You know, you try to convince them and talk to them. But a ghost campaign would almost be the same kind of idea, where you're trying to convince people to do things, but your interaction is very, very limited. You might only be able to talk to them for a certain amount of time, or you can only, I don't know, push them in directions by frightening them or trying to lead them in certain ways. I'm not actually sure that it would work, or even that it's a good idea, but I don't know, just the thought of it intrigued me.
I kind of see that as like make a non-verbal social game then.
Yeah, I suppose it is still social, but yeah, it doesn't rely mainly on talking to people.
I think that could be pretty cool. That one would... We've kind of said this before, but I think that would rely on the GM to be a fan of the players, you know?
Yeah.
Because basically, how the NPC reacts to this interaction is going to be entirely up to the hands of the Game Master. Or not necessarily, but it could be on how whatever, you know, dice roll you come up with for this interaction, it could rely on, you know, how if you roll well enough, then you're able to get your message across, you know, crystal clear, and the person you're interacting with would do it, where, you know, like a fail would mean they completely mistake what you're saying. But
yeah, it could also put a pretty heavy load on the GM, because one of the few things that ghosts can do really well is be voyeurs. You know, you can go through walls and you can be invisible when other people are around you talking. So the PCs would always be able to listen in on NPC conversations between each other, so it might be hard for a GM to run that.
I don't know. I think that could be interesting, because, like, it's almost the flip side of the coin, right? Like, mortal PCs, they can always interact with people, but they can't always get the information because they can't walk through walls. Ghosts, you have the opposites. Yeah, sure, they might be able to hear everything and have all this information, but who are they going to tell?
Yeah, the challenge
can't interact with anyone.
Yeah, I mean, it's very creative, and I hesitate to say avant-garde, but it can be extremely frustrating if you're forcing the players to communicate through 1950s song. You know, it's like, well, all right, yeah, but what is the song lyric? And you're like,
So don't have your plays play.
What's so good about goodbyes? Because I'm just going knocking for wealth. I give up.
Like I said, I'm not sure that it would actually work, but it's something that I'd like to try.
So, yeah, some standard advice is anytime you try something a little bit out there is plan a mini, like maybe a three shot or something like that. See how it goes, and you know,
and do it with people who are nice.
Yeah, but you know, people might be the greatest role players in the world and love each other to pieces, and then they sit down and they find out that the only way they can communicate is by getting one other player to do it, and the only way they can move something if another player does it, it can be frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's playing all the players as ghosts in a mortal world. And then, of course, a Wraith. They gave lots of opportunities to play Wraith as Wraith in a Wraith world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I had Wraith. I never played it, to be honest, so totally up front. Didn't grab me the way some other White Wolf games did. But one thing that I really, really thought was exciting about the game, not exciting enough to play, but was how you can manipulate the world. And it was... You had a lot of, you have freedom, like you create these like mirror worlds almost. So it gives you a starting point with creating your world, you know? It's like creating like a Robert E. Howard fantasy world where he's taking like the real history and then he's putting on his lair.
Hmm.
And the same with like these ghosts or wraith or phantom worlds is you can take the real world and then you put on your spirit lair. And that gives you as a game master, a lot of creativity. And then how does the material world interact with the spirit world? Do changes there, are they reflected in the spirit world? Or is the spirit world locked in different periods of time, you know?
Mm, yeah.
It sounds like they kind of took a little bit of that for the new werewolf, the Forsaken, where they have the spirit realm. And it's not ghosts, it's kind of like spirit.
Right.
They're split there. But, yeah, they have the spirit realm kind of reflects what happens in the real world, and the real world takes on a little bit of what's going on in the spirit realm.
Yeah.
So they kind of feed off each other. Like, I was wondering if you had all the PCs be ghosts, I guess a way to maybe curb some of their frustration or try and, I guess, diffuse it is to have the world they're going to be interacting with, the mortal world, be overly superstitious. So have the characters in the world sort of maybe not believe in ghosts, but, you know, do things with Ouija boards or, you know, have seances or do other things. You know,
yeah.
More than would happen in the kind of the standard real world.
Yeah, you're totally right. It would make much more sense if they made a bump in the night and that person actually reacted rather than just saying, it's just the dishwasher and going back to sleep.
Yeah.
That would be frustrating, yeah.
I spelled out help me and Steve on the letter, huh? Some kid just playing a trick. Oh, come on!
Man, you guys really abandoned the playing in the spirit world pretty fast.
Sorry.
And you know what's a really cool idea? Is playing in the spirit world.
Yeah.
I love that.
Hold on.
I may have heard that somewhere before, but it sounds completely like, awesome.
Can we get back to the Ouija board? actually, a cool thing about the Ouija board is you could actually have like a little bit of you could have a really easy prop, and that would be the Ouija board.
Mm-hmm.
And then you as the game master, and this is kind of revealing about the Ouija board, is could move the thing along and give the clues through the Ouija board.
No, that's how it works?
Unlike a real Ouija board where the spirits speak to you.
Oh, you cynic.
By the way, Hasbro is considering making a movie, Ouija. I think it's on hold, though.
I heard about that.
You know what? After seeing Battleship, I bet it'll be awesome.
Yeah,
you know what?
I'd watch any movie. By the Candyland, I'm there.
Hungry, hungry hippos.
Sometimes we just get too hungry. Hippo ghost. There you go.
Yeah, I was thinking that. Hungry, hungry ghost hippos.
I've seen the movie Writing Itself. This pen must be possessed because this script...
Auto writing. There you go.
What about one player is a ghost and everybody else is not a ghost?
Again,
you guys just want to play the all ghosts interacting with the world with the Ouija board. That's
no, you tacked on the Ouija board thing. We didn't bring it up.
Oh, seance.
It would be tough because you might again get frustration if you're trying to do the kind of limited communication between it. But if that wasn't the case, then I suppose, it's just another set of skills brought to a group, and you could do a lot of interesting stories with it. I don't know, though. It's kind of tough to see, because, like, if you're going with the ghost, like, he wants to, I don't know, get his body a proper burial, then you have maybe the frustration of communicating that to the other players. But if you don't have that frustration, then he can just tell them, hey, guys, can you bury my body?
Yeah, I don't know. I was thinking, Eclipse Phase, and you kind of have that in that where someone can be the bodiless, you know, digital consciousness as part of the team.
Yeah, that would be totally awesome. Can I do that, Wayne?
Yeah, I already said no.
Oh, clip face. Oh, okay, yeah.
Oh, jeez. Would you like to this?
Oh man.
What is it? Did we make some bet like 6 months ago? I bet you can't work in Eclipse Phase into every episode.
Hey, this actually relates. The bodiless digital consciousness. How is that not an electronic ghost?
It is.
All right. Booyah. There you go.
Hater's gonna hate, man. Hater's gonna hate.
Oh, I'm just thinking about next episode. I think he's going to have a tough time working in Eclipse Phase.
You could do it. There are just, it's just a different kind of challenges that you would have to give the ghost player, you know? And yeah, it could work. I could also see it splitting the party, you know? Cause well, the ghost, if he's intangible or if she's intangible, just says, yeah, I can just fly through this. I can just walk through everything and nothing can hurt me.
I think that's a really good point. Yeah, and because a big concern I have with the solo a ghost in the party is that they become almost like a pet.
That's what I was thinking too.
Or like kind of the novelty, and it takes away the horror.
Yeah.
One thing of that existence, and it's just like, all right, we need somebody to go through the walls. Let's use our permanent shadow cat. Go through it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. It's like go find out this information for us. You know. Go do this, go do that, go listen to that guy.
And the challenges that present themselves from playing a ghost, again, like the idea of having difficulty communicating with the real world, that isn't really good for a cohesive party or a group effort.
Yeah, because again, I can see some of the players getting frustrated. Oh, just tell me. No, you can't. Stop pushing that stupid penny around and just tell me what you want.
I mean, you could do it to where they aren't an insubstantial ghost, or they're almost like a real person, or maybe a possessed person, but, you know, then you're kind of getting away from them being an actual ghost, so.
All right, well, on that caution, that wraps up our episode on creature feature ghosts. So I think there's a lot you can do with that. So I'm pretty excited about having ghosts in my story now.
Mm-hmm. Though not possibly one.
Or one ghost, yeah.
All right.
or an electronic being, yeah. Anyway, thank you for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online, www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episode right there on the website, or download it through Stitcher, or off of DriveThruRPG, or through iTunes. You can also send us an email. You can comment in our forums, follow us on Twitter or on Facebook, because we always love hearing from all of you. And please tell us some of your ghost stories, because it's the month of horror. And see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Drive Through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive Through RPG, the one true source for RPGs.
Oh,
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.